You know, as we sit here nearing the end of summer, I feel like there's a lot of questions being asked about different players, different transfers, different news that's broken, and we don't always have the opportunity to discuss those. So what I did for episode number 207 of the Jersey Wall is I gathered five pressing questions we had to discuss. We hope you enjoy. Can you believe TJW 200 was 7 weeks ago?
Bro, it's insane. At 207 already. I know, it felt like yesterday, bro.
I guess what I should do, before we even get into this, I completely just realized it's so natural when we talk to each other. You haven't been on the show in a little while. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 207 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mr. Nathan Santos. But with me, that estranged voice, in case you haven't heard him in a little while, we got Joe back in the hot seat. Joey, what's going on, man?
Bro, good, man. You know, summer vacation, family over, lots of stuff. I think that's August, bro. I know August isn't done yet, but it, like, mid-July to now has been nonstop. And it really ends next weekend when I have like the last birthday, because you know everyone was born on August. Like, I don't know what to tell you, but it was insane. It's been fun. I'm glad to be back, you know. Not really glad because Chelsea do kind of suck.
Wonder if that's gonna come up today.
I know, right? But I'm happy to be back to talk to you, bro, and shout out Mina couldn't be here today, but we still love you, Mina. And yeah, bro, let's start. New season, new us, I guess.
Yeah, bro. Yo, Mina used your presence as an exit ticket. He was like, right? Joseph, I'm out. All right, you guys go have a good weekend. I'm going to take the weekend off.
I'm at the cottage. Yeah. I'm like, you know exactly. What? It's okay. Like, I got you, bro.
He went on vacation. We're going to have to put him back to the grind. I guess you've been off for a while. You got to start picking up the slack here in this Jersey Wall co-hosting chair. Give Mina his damn vacation again. Guys. Listen, like I said, there's a lot of questions being asked about so many things that's going on. The Saudi Pro League, the transfers, the players who are going there, what the implications are. Then you look at the teams that are still being assembled here. The fact that Prem is losing some of its buying power because people are poaching. There's so much going on. But I think the pinnacle of all of it, when we talk about transfers, when we talk about expenditures, when we talk about expenses, when we talk about players, all these things, they all center around one club right now. And it's the club who spent $1 billion in the last three windows with a B, Joe. Yes, we've been at your club for a little while. I feel like sometimes we're harsh to criticize. Sometimes we're, I think, pretty reasonable in our assessments. Justified.
Yeah.
You haven't been here to defend or speak on behalf of your club. So before I actually get into any of the questions, I want to open the floor to you to just ask you about how you feel about the financial backing going into your club and the state of the project now versus where you see it going.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, of course I'm happy. I mean, we like everyone should be happy with an owner that spends, but I'm more worried in a sense of, are we bringing in the right personnel? Do we really have a project going? Because, you know, I don't know all the, like, I'm, Chelsea has barely been part of projects, right? We all know that for years, it's just been like, okay, we move on to the next and get them their certain personnel. And if that doesn't work, we move on to the next and it keeps on going, right?
Yeah.
But the cycle has to end. So this is something alien, to me. I tell a lot of Chelsea fans. But listen, I'm a patient guy and I wasn't able to give my prediction for Chelsea this year, but it's definitely like maximum, I think like six. I think we're going to be dropping below that. I wouldn't be really surprised if we had another eighth or ninth season this year, like ninth place season, as long as I see some, I don't really care for amazing football, but decent football and just results. I can see the strategy. I can see the tactics, bro. Hashtag tactics, bro. Yeah. In the comments, right? Okay. I can see what Pochettino's trying to implement. And I can see that the players that we brought in are like actually useful, you know? So I'm not expecting everything to change overnight. You know, as we all know, like January showed, we got an influx of players. They didn't gel together, you know, that quickly. Yeah. And we did it again this summer. So like, if you look at the club, it's brand new, you know. I was making the comment that it's a bunch of Timbits. It's like a Timbit league because they're all like young kids, bro. They're younger than us, Nate. So yeah,
they are, some distance, not even like just slightly. Yeah, our age, like, bro, they're way younger than us.
Because like 18, 19, I don't even know, man. It's like, so, and he's starting. And it's an exciting project. It's exciting to see. And I'm really happy that a lot of players did get sold on the project, you know. We did sign Latvia and Caicedo, two midfielders that we really needed. But like, I know the Caicedo price tag is disgusting, and I understand. And I don't think he'll ever live up that price tag, to be honest with you, unless he turns to N'Golo Kanté, and that's a different story. But as long as he gives us the potential we know he has, I'm okay with it. And I'm not expecting him this first season to be like 10 out of 10. I don't expect anyone to be like a 10 out of 10 other than Enzo. But like, of course, because he's like a fantastic player. And, you know, Thiago Silva and stuff like that. But it's really a season for the team to really get to know how it is to play together, what it means to play for Chelsea. You know, for Pochettino to understand the flow and pick his best 11. That's my biggest thing, is that I wish we can pick our best 11, minus injuries. Of course, injuries happen, but something consistent, you know, for the rest of the season that we were missing last season. But I'm not excited. I'm not going to say I'm excited, because I'm kind of like a hands-off approach this season for the first time in my life, to be honest with you. And it's because weird saying it. It's just that I don't want, why do I have to stress out if the team is just like brand new? And I'm like, I know they're passionate, and I've seen it during preseason and the first game against Liverpool. It's just, how do they play with each other? I mean, not a spoiler alert, we did lose 3-1 just now to West Ham. Okay. And they scored a goal after being 10 men down. And Enzo missed the penalty. So you can see, like, I sat on the couch. Yeah, I got angry and stuff. But then I just said, you know, we did have moments where I saw signs of potential. Jackson is a fantastic striker, man. He is amazing. He really works hard. Enzo, you know, we all know what Enzo brings. Yes, he had mishaps. Yes, he missed the pen. But he was the heart of the team. And, you know, Sterling is a seasoned vet at this point. We'll see what happens. I'm not expecting us to beat Man City, Arsenal. I'm not expecting that, right? These guys have been playing together for a while now, you know, especially Arsenal's went through that phase already, that phase that we're going through.
Right.
And we'll see what's to come. The only ones that I'm really, like, United aren't doing well at all, to be quite honest, for the amount of players that they have been playing together with. You know, I don't really know what the issue is, but you watched the game yesterday. I don't know. I wasn't there to watch it, but that's another story. And I know Mina would want to defend it, but maybe me and Mina might be out of Europe again next year. So who knows? Yeah.
Well, if we can ever get you both on the same freaking episode of the pod, maybe you guys could talk to each other about it. Damn, bro.
Could you imagine? Yeah.
Guys just missing weeks every week, man. Listen, I think there's an underrated characteristic in football, which is seniority. And as much as we love young talent, we think that 100%. We look at them and we get excited by their potential and we think they should fulfill that right now. The lack of seniority in the team comes into play. Now, usually it's detrimental when clubs don't finish in Champions League positions because the finances, you know, start to suffer and everything else. The fact that Chelsea still have as much pulling power as they do from as low as they finished in the table last season, I think is pretty remarkable, right? Like, they could still attract these top tier talents and spend top dollar to get these dudes through the door. Means
correct,
really, it's like you said, even if maximum you finish top six, it's not like they're that concerned about it, because you almost have this whole season to go, let's figure out what it means to be Chelsea Football Club, because everything that meant Chelsea Football Club is now no longer at the club. So all of these players have to forge the new identity of what Chelsea Football Club is, because the Abramovich era now is done. The hot seat era should be done. The reckless spending, this can't go on forever. You will get a transfer ban. But at least you'll have all the players you'll ever need.
Yeah.
Right. At that point, you'll have all the players to succeed for years and years to come. I'm not saying Chelsea are perfect or even clean slated, because there's still, you know, the Lukaku things and there's still more players that they're linked with and everything else and injuries and everything else. But largely, if Chelsea are able to forge this identity with time and they have the support of the fans to say, like, listen, we want to win. This is Chelsea. We're used to just aggressive turnarounds and going back to compete. Now that's like, you know what? Our aggregate midfield age is 21 years old. And we're not buying older players, which means the only way we're going to add seniority to this squad is with time, because when you have the talent that these players have and the time that they'll have spent together, Chelsea will be an absolute freaking force to be reckoned with, just not right now. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. You're winless on the season so far, but it's like you said, it doesn't feel as alarming as last season. Last season, it still felt like the mayhem and the chaos was going on. Whereas now, I think everybody kind of looks at it as just, an exciting young project. And if Chelsea figure it out, the sooner the better. But it's not detrimental to anybody if they can't, because none of these players are going to leave. They're on 400-year contracts. Right? Yeah, they're all prepared to stay there until they figure it out.
Listen, even if we get the transfer ban, which I personally think, you know, based on the situation right now, maybe we will. I don't really care, to be honest. We got everything that needed this summer. Right?
Forever.
So, forever. Yeah, forever. So, literally. In fact, it might be better because the team will have no choice but to gel together, right?
Yep.
So, and we already felt that. I know how it is to be under a transfer ban. And what came out of it, Reece James, Mason Mount, you know, a lot of great players coming out other than Mason Mount. But, a lot of players gelling well. Tomori, you know, fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
But last comment on Chelsea for now. I mean, we'll see how the season goes. I'm not expecting much. You won't see Crazy Joe all the time unless, like, I'm really, really tired of it. But the process, man, I'm going to have to get used to it. Like, this is a new age in Chelsea. There has to be a new Joe, I guess. So we'll see how it goes.
We got to grow up eventually, all of us.
I know, bro.
I would love to say last word on Chelsea, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you some of these. A lot of the pressing questions, that's a good, like, general overview of what Chelsea look like right now. But I do have pressing questions, some of these less pressing than others, but interesting questions that I want to ask you about.
Yes.
We'll start with some of the signings that Chelsea made. The fact that you were able to secure the signatures of both Moises Caicedo and Romeo Lavia when it seemed like it was an either-or kind of scenario, you end up getting both. Caicedo cost £115 million, which, of course, I know, you know, we're obviously going to speak about. Romeo Lavia cost $58, the most expensive teenager in the history of the Premier League.
And the most expensive player in the history of the Premier League.
And the most expensive player in the history of the Premier League. Right, back-to-back.
Back-to-back, yeah.
I want to ask you, which one of those is a better signing? And I'm prepared to debate it. I actually want to turn it into a bit of a debate. And to be honest, I have no horse in the race. I don't even care. I will take whichever one you don't argue, because I feel like I can make a pretty compelling case for both of them. Mm-hmm. Romeo Lavia for 58 or Moises Caicedo for 115. Caicedo, obviously a better player than Lavia is currently, but Lavia for half the price. What do you think? What was the better transfer for Chelsea?
Now, money-wise, obviously, I'd say Latvia, and I feel like a lot of the skill set is very similar in a sense, but in the current moment, we really needed Caicedo. So I think the reason we went all out for Caicedo is because we really needed a player like Caicedo. It's important because I'm going to go with Caicedo. Okay. And the reason being is that for the potential, not his potential, because we all know his potential, but it gives us a higher chance to actually maybe attain a European spot, depending on how the season progresses. But it's more of a player that can give Enzo his like free time, you know. Yeah. Enzo doesn't need to worry about recovering all the time, and he can distribute the ball. And we saw a little bit of today when he came on, and you could see glimpses of it. Yeah, people are going to say we conceded a penalty because of the Caicedo tackle and all that. Well, fine. That's okay. But I'm not looking at that right now. You know, that was that wasn't really Caicedo's fault. Another topic of defensive combustion. I don't even know what word you could use because it was terrible today defensively. But you could see that Enzo did have more freedom. Yeah, Enzo was tired, but assuming they both start at the same time in the starting lineup, then Enzo gets more free time just based off Caicedo's movements alone. So I'd say Caicedo, his skill set is up there. We already know what he did last year in Brighton. He's already accustomed to the Premier League. He's super young, bro. He is super young, tall, physical. He needs to develop his game still. Listen, 9 out of 11 players on this team, maybe a bit less, but like 9 of them still need to develop their game, bro. So that's like
8 outfield players minimum. Like,
yeah, 8 minimum.
9 outfield players, you could even argue, because of you know, like Thiago Silva and Raheem Sterling are probably the only two full out rounded skill sets where they know
exactly
the player they are.
Everyone else needs to develop. Yeah, 100%. Everyone else needs to develop their game. And it's exciting but also very scary to see. But on that topic, no, definitely Caicedo. It's really amazing. It's kind of astonishing that we got both. I don't know what the promises were. I don't know how it went down in the change room or like in the negotiation table, but I'm really happy, and I think we did some wonderful business this year. Outgoings and incomings. So, I'm going to go with Caicedo, man. I'm going to go with Caicedo.
I'm glad you took that position because, obviously, I've made my feelings pretty well known about Caicedo over the last couple of weeks on the podcast. Yeah. I talked about, why I think the price tag is worth it, even though it's a fortune. I'm glad that you picked that because it lets me talk a little bit more about Lavia. And I alluded to this last week slightly, which is Romeo Lavia under Pochettino is his Moussa Dembélé. That's his ideal midfielder as the ball shielder, as the progressive carrier, as the ambitious passer. It's a slightly different skill set than Enzo's because Enzo's a little bit more technically precise, whereas Romeo Lavia is a big freaking guy. Now, I know Romeo Lavia quite well because he was part of the City Academy. And when he was starting to push through, as the City Academy does, and I say we, there's a lot of players that I really want to see get first team minutes that I'm realizing that's not their purpose for the club. Their purpose for the club is fundraising £50 million per window. And Romeo Lavia going to Chelsea doubles what City got for him when we sold him to Southampton because we put on the sell-on clause, right? So we sold him for 12 or something like that. And then I think we had a 20% sell-on clause. So that's another 12-ish from the Chelsea signing. I mean, we got £25 million for a player who never featured for Man City. Here's what I asked myself for this. City had a buyback clause, but it was only activated in 2024. I wonder if we would have pushed for that if, he hadn't turned out to be such a brilliant player. But what I would have loved to have seen was Romeo Lavia's integration into the team if we didn't buy Calvin Phillips. Right, because I feel like he could have had that spot. The problem is Calvin Phillips doesn't play, so maybe we wouldn't know how good Romeo Lavia is. I'm glad that we get to see how good he is, and that's why I want to make this case on behalf of why he might be the better signing for Chelsea, bro. When we look at what constitutes a good deal, paying a fortune for something great is not a great deal. It's just it's business as usual almost, right? You could probably make an argument that the most expensive teenager in the history of the Premier League going for a player who just been relegated and injured for a lot of the season with Southampton is what optics might indicate. There are people who will see that and go, I can't believe they just paid that for Romeo Lavia. I'm of a completely different mindset. I think that much like the spotlight was on Caicedo in a lot of ways at Brighton, I feel like Lavia was the gem of Southampton, right? And if he was fit the whole season, he was tasked with a lot of things, but if he was fit for the whole season, it might have gone a long way in keeping Southampton up. I think taking the step up in levels of recognition while still playing around players who are not really better than him, right? Like there's some who are better than him for sure, but largely he's playing with kids and he's a really good young player and everybody around him is a really good young player.
Correct.
I'm not taking away from the Caicedo deal and how much it costs, but if you had said to me, hey, we're going to pay 50 odd mil for Romeo Lavia, and we're going to have him for the future, I would have been like, that's a brilliant signing because that's a great player for a respectable price tag who will be with you for years and years and years to come. And when we contrast that with Caicedo's a wonderful player and will be with the club for a long time, but costs double, I think you look at arguably the better transfer is the one that's more of a steal because no one could say that Moises Caicedo was a steal. They'd say, that's business done. Romeo Lavia for 58 might in due time look like, wow, that's all they paid for him, especially when his midfield partners will be the two most expensive players in the history of the league, right? If he's part of that trio, when we go, he was 120, he was 115, he was 50. That, you know what? That's some good, that was a good bit of business by Chelsea for picking him up.
Correct. No, I totally agree with that standpoint too. I'm gonna touch on the point that you said of Caicedo and Lavia being the highlights of their teams last year. You know, I'll never forget Lavia's performance against Arsenal during that 3-3 that really tanked them to lose the league, right? I'll never forget that because he was all over the pitch. All over, man. He was fantastic, amazing. And we were like, wow, this guy is only 18, you know, all that. I'm really happy he's here, but for both of them, I'm just really worried. I don't, like, we have all these talented players, but, you know, some of these, like, I don't want Lavia to be a bench player. I don't want him to be, like, a super sub. I don't want, of course, Caicedo can't be a super sub. Yeah. Like, he has starts no matter what. But Enzo, Caicedo, Lavia, okay, we got the three midfielders, three center mid CDMs, whatever. And what now though? Are we? Doesn't Pochettino doesn't play with like 4-3-3? He plays a 4-2-3-1. And then on top of that, Nkunku's still in the club. I know he's injured for a while, but like, where are we gonna play him? Mudrik's still here. You know, there's so many question marks. That's my biggest.
A lot of
issue.
Expense. You're right. Yeah. There are certainly a lot of questions. I feel like his Chelsea formation, he will try to adopt more of a 3-5-2. Because to be honest, that works for Nkunku too when he comes back. Raheem Sterling will lose his place because it'll be Nkunku and Jackson. But that works really well for both of them. And if you're midfield three, it seems harsh now, but it's not like stapled, locked in 11 like we think of as a lineup.
Correct. Yep.
Over the course of the next several years, if you're looking at a midfield three, that's usually your starting midfield of Lavia, Caicedo, and Enzo. Genuinely, on a stat map, if you're to graph what all their best skill sets are, I think you cover everything you could possibly need, because you have some who are slightly better at different things, but it's not like you drop in a perfect 10 with great take-ons and great through balls, but terrible recoveries and everything else. All of them are very complete midfielders who can do a lot of things. And I think Pochettino knows that and sees Lavia as a bigger version of both of those two players and goes, yeah, that's my Dembele. Like I need him in my team.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I hope you realize that Poch isn't a dumb coach. We all know what he does. He's smart. He's great to develop the youth. It's just more on the defensive aspect that I'm really worried about. But he signed two players that can help with that, right?
Big time.
And it's exciting, but I can see the two, like, people going for, oh, no, Caicedo's the better signing or Lavia the better signing for many reasons. We can go on and on about this, but... Yeah. Either way, ultimately, both are fantastic signings for the club. And I really look forward to seeing them play together, hopefully. We'll see what's to come. But definitely, Lavia's price was like, it could be a steal, like potentially. Depending on how he like eventually plays and what he overcomes, it could be a complete steal.
I want to spin this into a segue for my next point, only because we've been on Chelsea for a while. I could keep going with Chelsea, but I feel like we have time for this Chelsea project to talk about it. On the note of a steal, this is a yes or no, but I want you to back your point here. Is now that we've seen a lot of these players go for such enormous fees, both even you look at a player like Romeo Lavia, who's, you know, 19 years old and going for 58 million pounds in euros, that's like, what, 70 million euros?
Yeah.
Is Jude Bellingham for 103 mil actually a steal?
Oh, that's a good point. Good question.
Because here's what's happened so far this season, Joe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's been the drifter into the box who's scored game-winning goals on the weekend yesterday against Almeria, I believe is the pronunciation of the club. Two goals and an assist. And in his first game, he scored a goal as well. When you have Bellingham getting on the score sheet as often as he will, and he will, because Carlo makes damn sure of that in the system, you start to think about it. Well, hold on a second. A lot of these players who are going for that price tag are stabilizing their team. Your Rice, your Caicedo, your expensive players around them and whatever else. It only cost 103 million euros to get Jude Bellingham firing on all cylinders for Real Madrid. And when you look at the landscape around him and the contributions he might make, I might already, 2 weeks ago, I said maybe this isn't the best one. Already, I might be wrong. I'm going, oh, no, that's actually a steal.
You know what? I think this could potentially be a steal. I mean, instant performances, he's just an instant impact on his team. It is a steal in a sense because he already has that Champions League experience as well. And going to the biggest Champions League club in the world and already performing, bro. Like Vinicius on full gear, him on full gear. It's going to be crazy. And based on the market right now and what we've seen, including Chelsea, who we did sign Caicedo for 116 million, but Caicedo's only done great in the Prem last year, you know, and we did gamble on that. But a proven player in Jude, who's been fantastic ever since he's left Birmingham, right? Yeah. For 100 mil. I think that price, maybe it's not a steal, but it does make sense. It is like I think that's what the value of Jude Bellingham is, to be exact.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but compared to how it is in the market right now, yeah, it's a steal because he didn't Right. For a player like that, you'd usually spend 130, 140 for, right?
I see what you're saying. Right. So, you're like, it's a fair market value for Jude Bellingham, but in a market where everybody's going for way more than their market value is.
Correct.
It's actually a steal for Jude Bellingham. I don't correct. Disagree with you, bro. I think and I wanted to bring this up because I watch the, you know, the Real Madrid games as often as I can. TSN is not friendly with showing people
not at all.
Liga games.
It I'm watching Barcelona. Yeah.
It makes me sick to my stomach, bro. But hey, on this note, pause right here. You know what's sick? Sportsnet doesn't have Bundesliga anymore. It's now on DAZN, so I can watch all my Bundesliga games. No problems. I'm absolutely over the moon. And we're going to get to Bundesliga in a little bit. But back to Bellingham. It feels like a loaded question to say, can anybody be a steal for 100-odd million? But I think when you look at the landscape around him and the impact that he can have, not just in the future, but right now, you start to go, oh, yeah. Like, that was... any price that they paid for him, you could argue, is a steal because it wasn't, they didn't overpay. And anything correct. Under overpaying is a steal because they should have overpaid. Now, I understand there's still add-ons to come. And maybe by the time it's all said and done, they've paid Dorman 130 odd mil. And we go, yeah, it was a hell of a transfer for all those involved. But for right now, it's just over 103 million euros. And in the British world of pounds, it makes it a bit of a steal, bro, because none of the other players with a price tag of over 100 mil, I would argue, have hit the ground running like this already. Now, this might be form speaking. Like, I might just be hot on his form because he is in form, and maybe he goes on a dry spell and he doesn't get any goals for 8 weeks or whatever. And I go, ah, fuck, I spoke too soon. But for right now, I'm looking at it and going, nah, be like, there's been two games. You got four goal involvements as a midfielder in the first two games of the season. What's leading me to believe that will become any less? Nothing. If anything, I would imagine he will get better with time. He won't score at this rate forever. We understand that. But if Jude Bellingham ends the season as Real Madrid's highest scoring midfielder, ahead of like Valverde, who was, you remember the streak he went on before the World Cup last year?
Amazing.
If Jude Bellingham hits that kind of form, we're going to go, it doesn't matter what they paid for him. It doesn't matter if they paid twice this. We would still go, like, what a deal by Real Madrid. Look at 100%. The player that they got. Whatever the price was, he merited it. And the fact that he's performing at the rate that he has, he's come out hitting ground running. That's so hard to do in a new team, in a new league, as a young player who doesn't speak the
especially a team like Real Madrid. Like, it's crazy, man. The pressure already is on like cloud nine. So fantastic. And you know what, bro? Like, it's another good, it's good business from Madrid in a sense, but they also tapped in early on. They always tap into these players, bro. I don't know. Yeah. Someone needs to investigate them on like, what's the word in the NBA? It's like, oh my God, tampering. They're tampering.
Right, right.
Yeah. They're literally a tampering kings right now. So,
well, there's a lot of tampering going on right now, bro. Like, even with the Saudi Arabia of it all, where they're just like, what do you guys think of making 20 million a year? And everybody's like, I want to make 20 million a year.
Hell yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Absolutely, bro. Who wouldn't?
I know.
I'm going to take us all over the map with these questions because I genuinely have so many thoughts about different places in the world.
Yeah.
Since we mentioned Saudi Arabia, I think it's really interesting when you look at some of the deals that have happened. I want to ask you, Joe, to rank these midfield pivots.
Okay.
Newcastle's midfield pivot of Tonali and Guimarães. Yeah, I know it's a three, but just bear with me, everybody, okay? For the sake of just play along. The midfield duos of substantial names and quality, right? Tonali Guimarães, Caicedo Enzo, Milinkovic-Savic, Ruben Neves. Put those in order of best to worst midfield pivots in the world. Because I feel just the mere idea of departing Europe lowers our perception of Milinkovic-Savic and Ruben Neves. But if you told anybody that, let's say Juventus, let's call it Juve, anybody, take your pick, had bought Milinkovic-Savic and Ruben Neves in Europe, let's say it was Liverpool even.
Yeah.
Everyone would go, oh my God. Like, look at what they just said. Now it's in Saudi Arabia. We go, oh, who's going to watch Al Hilal? By the way, I watched their game yesterday. Don't have me. I did.
Yeah. I want to watch all their games, to be honest.
The first
I'm not
those
kidding.
Are the boys
yeah.
now. I watched it.
That's
the team, bro. Freaking love them. Rank those three midfield pivots right now from best to worst.
Okay. Best, I'm going to say Enzo Caicedo.
Stop.
It's like I say the number one. But really, based off experience and everything, it has to be Hilal's. It has to be Neves and Milinkovic-Savic, right? First. Second, I think Enzo Caicedo. And then third, I'd say Guimarães Tonali.
Are you serious? Yo, I actually, Joe, I might change that altogether. I might put Tonali Guimarães first.
You're fucking crazy.
Because, I mean, you know, I have my extreme bias towards Bruno Guimarães.
I love
Bruno Guimarães. But if we were to seriously look at it, if any of these teams faced each other, who's winning the midfield battle amongst these ones? If you have Tonali Guimarães versus Enzo and Caicedo. If it happened today, oh man, that's a tough battle.
That'd be good.
I really might back Newcastle's midfield in that game between the two of them. Because they're, bro, I mean, listen, people are about to see Sandro Tonali on a whole other scale. We saw it in the first game of the season. Obviously, playing City next is not great for either of those players. Because Bruno even came away and said, bro, I hate playing at the Etihad. It's like we're playing seven men down. They have so many more players than us.
Yeah, right? For sure.
But Bruno and Tonali, the amount of ground that they covered, the tenacity, the energy, the heart they bring to their team, and the quality on the ball abilities, particularly with Tonali in that respect, I feel is arguably amongst the very, very, very best. Caicedo Fernandes, you know, I'm the hottest person in the world on Enzo, and Caicedo, I absolutely love, but I feel like that's the one for the future. If you said which one has the highest ceiling, I would probably tell you this one. And then Milinkovic-Savic-Neves, bro. I'm telling you, I am part of the people who are lowered by, and it's so hypocritical of me, but just the idea that I can't see them play on the grandest stage makes me feel like it's taking them out of the conversation. Even though in terms of abilities, Ruben Neves and Sergei Milinkovic-Savic are proven ballers over the last several years.
Correct, right? Yeah.
And I think that Ruben Neves really never got his flowers because he was playing at Wolves and Wolves weren't very good. Same thing with Milinkovic-Savic because, bro, remember, I don't know if you were part of this. I'm about to lay it out on me. I called him a B-plus player. He's like, he has a B-plus player.
Mina said that, yeah.
He did say that. I don't remember if you said that, but Mina called him that. And I was like, no, that's cap, bro. If you're watching Lazio play, this dude's doing so much from midfield and goal scoring and goal creating midfielders. I was like, bro, if Kevin De Bruyne was doing that in the Serie A, would anybody be thinking of Kevin De Bruyne? Or they'd be like, it's the Serie A. What he's doing is easy. I would have loved to have seen Sergei Milinkovic-Savic do it on the grandest stage, either at a Real Madrid or a top six Prem team, just to prove to the world that he was that guy. Bro, if I had to rank these, I'd have a Sergei Milinkovic-Savic. You know how hot we are on him.
Yeah,
100%. By himself. It really, really leads me to think of what this battle would be like. But I think I would put Caicedo Enzo third for now, but in terms of potential highest. And then I might have to. Yeah, I don't know, bro. This is an absolute toss. If I'm locking it in,
lock it in.
I would say Sergei Milinkovic-Savic and Ruben Neves have more pedigree than the other two.
Yeah.
And, you know, love me or hate me for that. It hurts me to say. Because I'm so hot on that Newcastle pivot, but
I know, and
it's unbelievable that Saudi Arabia can even enter a conversation for one of the best pivots in world football.
I know. You know what? Money talks, brother.
Money talks.
Just ask Caicedo. No, I'm kidding.
Ain't that the truth? But it's interesting, bro. Because even if I had to say, if I asked you who's the best midfield pivot in the world, you'd have a tough time to figure it out. You'd go, I don't know, right? Like I would probably say. And there's different iterations of how City play, because I can't really say City play with a pivot, whereas now it looks like it's Kovacic and Rodri. I'd say that is probably the best midfield partnership in the world, especially if Bernardo's in there too, because it's over at that point, right? But
yeah,
where do you put the Tchouaméni Camavinga one or Tchouaméni Valverde or Valverde Modric or any iteration of Real Madrid's ones? Bro, I don't know. But my point that I was getting at here is that Sergei Milinkovic-Savic and Ruben Neves are amongst the very, very best midfield pivots on planet Earth. And they're playing in a league that we are now going to start watching because of them.
100%. Bro, listen, it's... It's fantastic to think that that Saudi Arabia got like so many players. You know when we did the Saudi episode, we're like, oh my god, more to come, and we're talking about, oh my god, so many players and all that stuff. But bro, since we made that episode, it's gone crazy. Yep. It's like insane, bro, insane. And I think that midfield pivot is going to have an extra coming soon, maybe, depending on how the world go. I don't know if the Verratti thing is still a thing?
Not to Al-Hilal.
Not to Al-Hilal.
He's got to go to a different one. Where, no, bro?
He's going to...
You tell me they're going to play...
Pick a different one.
It's going to be Ruben Neves, Verratti, Milinkovic-Savic, Neymar, Malcolm, and Mitrovic. That's the front six. What are we doing?
Yeah, bro. Bro, didn't you hear about that? I heard about that rumor. They're playing Football Manager, I swear to God.
They are, bro. They're playing career mode, dude.
Yeah. Playing career mode. I think Football Manager is a bit more like tactical. This one's just like, fuck it. Like everyone will just get them all.
It's crazy. That's how many they have. Insane.
I know, bro. Well, shout out Saudi Arabia, I guess, for now.
Listen, speak of the devil, I name dropped Neymar there. He's actually my next one. The conclusion, it feels like the conclusion of Neymar's career is signing off to Saudi Arabia. Much like it was for Ronaldo when he went there. We're going, that's the end of him in Europe. Joe, a year ago at this time, I probably would have said Neymar's the number one person to win the Ballon d'Or. Because the form he had after the first month at PSG, and not to mention, I thought Brazil were going to win the World Cup.
We did. We were like,
bro.
Yeah.
Neymar would have won the Ballon d'Or. I want to ask you, now that the Ballon d'Or chase is over, because he's not going to win the Ballon d'Or in Saudi Arabia. I think we all know that.
Yeah.
How well did Neymar fulfill his potential in his career?
Neymar did a terrible job in fulfilling his potential. And the other question that you could also ask is, do I think that Neymar thinks that he fulfilled his potential? He's going to say, yeah, because I made the most money out of any footballer ever.
Mm.
Maybe Mbappe is going to be the only one after me. Yeah, I feel like he probably made more money than Ronaldo, more than Messi. No, definitely, I think that. And for him, from a guy from Brazil, he supported his family and all that. That's great. But football-wise, zero. You know, he was on the 2014 UCL. I'll never forget that year, because when he won that, we're like, this guy could be on the trajectory of GOAT conversation.
Yeah.
GOAT conversation. Messi was still playing. Ronaldo was still playing. But we're talking about, bro, this is the third guy. He could come in. He's coming in. Since then, it's been an absolute disaster, to be honest. Mentality-wise, zero, okay? Injury-wise, it sucks. That's one thing I can't really blame him. Sometimes because of his mentality and the injuries always lining up, people think he's faking. You know, so many X factors everywhere. Question marks here, question marks there. It felt just yesterday, like it was just yesterday, Neymar was the 20-year-old from Santos just playing around with the ball.
With the blonde now hair. He's like, 10 years
yeah,
ago,
yeah, with the
bro.
Blonde hair. Now,
10
now
years ago, he signed for Barca.
Now he's 31, 32, and you're like, what have you shown? All your accolades have been since 2014? It's not good enough, brother. And yeah. You know what? The French league, I know, as much as we want to say, okay, it's still a trophy and stuff. We all, bro, everyone wins the French league with PSG, of course, because it's like you're there's no competition, right?
It's only an accomplishment if you win the Ligue 1 without PSG.
Yeah. Like, you know, if another on top club of that, won. During his career, there were teams that did it.
Yeah.
There were teams that won. Maybe a team, actually. I don't remember. But at least I know there's one team that won it when they were still competing. So I think that's also another stain on his thing. Like, how are you losing the fucking the league to nobodies, basically? No offense. But overall, dude...
Don't disrespect Canadian Jonathan David like that.
Yeah, of course. Sorry. My king.
Yeah.
But no, overall, I definitely don't think he fulfilled his potential. Now, I believe we had this conversation before, me and you, I think, either on the jersey wall or in person. But I know you have an argument for the other side. So I want to hear.
We're here.
Exactly. I want to hear it from you. So, but personally, no, I don't think he fulfilled his potential, to be honest.
Yeah, listen, it's on the show like this. the whole idea is to present different perspectives and stuff, and maybe things people haven't thought of. I anticipated a question like this will be asked because it feels like Neymar's resided his career to.
It's done. Yeah,
I've done. So, I've done what I done, and that's it. Whereas that's I feel it. Like yeah. the hunger of Neymar left some time ago. Right. Like 100%. I feel like he was satisfied with the paychecks. He was eating the money, but he wasn't hungry to kick ass in the way that he once was.
Exactly.
He wanted to win, but he didn't crave it. He didn't need it. It wasn't the ultimate beast.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Nate, but that's exactly the point. That point, I'm just going to hold on to it because if Neymar joined Chelsea, let's say today, Neymar would have been the best player in the Premier League right now. Right. Yeah, he still has it, but the missing hunger alone has been residing in him for throughout his career because some people, when they get success at such an early age coast, you know, they don't feel that hunger anymore. They want it. They did it, bro. I want the fucking Champions League, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened in the situation for Neymar. But I'm interested to hear what you said. Sorry, I cut you off, but keep going. Yeah.
No, I mean, listen, like, I think there was probably a time when people were looking at him as saying the third best player in the world, which is to be the best human alive, because at the time, no one thought Ronaldo or Messi were human, right? We have to remember what the 2008 to, I mean, Neymar wasn't around that. Let's just say since Neymar broke on the scene, we'll say from like 2011 to 2017.
Yeah.
It was Neymar and Ronaldo and Messi, but it was Ronaldo and Messi were on different tiers, on God mode, like no one had ever understood before, right?
Correct.
But
correct.
We thought Neymar was the next best guy.
Yeah.
People were saying, you know, Neymar, you know, is the next Ronaldinho, and then they went, no, he's the next greatest of all time. Whereas now, Joe, I think people will ask, who would you have taken in their prime, Neymar or Dino? And I don't think Neymar's done enough to take that from Dino. I think people will still go, oh no, Ronaldinho was better than Neymar. That should never have been an argument, bro. Neymar should have been. Because Dino was never in the conversation for the greatest to ever do it. Like this, from the streets, fine. But people will not say Ronaldinho's as good as Messi or Ronaldo at their absolute peak. People would have thought that about Neymar because we were starting to see him scratch the surface and break through that. Right. Whereas now I think that he fell short of that, like, ultra elite, because it felt like the legends that Brazil were producing were one upping each other. And it was who can be the next this guy. And I feel like Neymar had that, but he was supposed to take the torch and run with it and break, you know, put it in new ceilings. And I just don't think that he did that. And it's harsh to criticize him like that, because I'm going to take the position here that Neymar fulfilled his potential. Joe, it's the sad truth that maybe Neymar did fulfill his potential, bro. We were wrong. Like, think of how much that fucking hurts to say.
I know.
We were wrong about what we thought Neymar's potential was. We thought it was God mode on another level. No one could ever get, you know, near this guy because he's objectively more talented than Ronaldo, maybe even Messi. And if he had that Kobe mentality, bro, he would have, if he had even Ronaldo's mentality, you'd probably say this dude will be the best to ever do it. But he didn't. So we overestimated his potential, which means what did he accomplish? Not for what could have been, but for what he did. Well, let's look at it. He won the Champions League. He was part of one of the greatest trios to ever live. Launched PSG into a new stratosphere. Fine, PSG underdelivered, and there's criticism on what he did. But again, we only criticize what he did because we think of what he could have done. Whereas maybe we're not looking, and maybe we think of all players like this. What if all players only played 6 months of the year? How good would they be? How good would those players be if they played half the amount of games? Bro, maybe they'd be on. Maybe there'd be so many Neymars walking around who are just ballers because they would play within what their body allowed them, and the rest of the time they'd say, I'm not playing. Maybe we saw what Neymar's potential was. Maybe he fulfilled it to the full degree and then ended up being the highest paid player to ever live and go collect hundreds of millions of years from the time he was from 2017 onwards. Maybe it's not about what Neymar didn't do in his career. It's about what he did. And what he did, fine, he fell short of the Ballon d'Or, and I think we all expected him to get one. No player had the passed the eye test like Neymar did, bro. Like, to watch him play football, all of us were just like, bro, how could anybody, making it look so simple, but against the absolute best in the world, we take it away from the Messi and from the Ronaldos of it all. Because again, we're not saying he's a GOAT, right? So we have to take them out of it and just say, could any other player have done what he did? No. Does it suck that he existed in the same era as the Ronaldos and the Messis? Yeah, maybe. Because you know what? If he didn't, he probably would have cleaned up on those for a number of years.
Correct.
What he did in his career was win the league almost every year, make absolute bank, but fell short of the big one. And the unfortunate part is I think we will remember him for never tasting gold, right? The World Cup or the Ballon d'Or or the two big gold ones that he never quite managed.
Yeah.
But that's our bias, bro. We're looking at it as he could have done all those things. He didn't do all those things. You know, maybe we were wrong about his potential. Maybe he was just the player meant to be the best player in the world for a short burst, playing fewer games and helping his team. And he did that, bro. So it's a disappointing thing to see, because I'm sure he will light up the Saudi league. But to be honest, bro, if he never scores a goal again, are we going to care? If he scores 1,000 goals in Saudi Arabia, are we going to care? You know, it's great for what the Saudi thing is, and we're all Al Hilal fans now. We love to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
But realistically, it feels disappointing for us, because I think we all feel like he fell short. But that it's the end. It's the end for Neymar. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. My counter to that only, Nathan, is that we were here in the Jersey Wall. We talked about his big transfer. You can actually see that on YouTube, because we left it on YouTube for it's a 14-minute clip. Of talking about Neymar's transfer of $222 million to PSG. You know, at the time, this is the most expensive transfer I think in history to date.
Yeah.
We said on that podcast, bro, it's like a Champions League or bust.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's sad to see, because it felt like yesterday, but we're sitting here today. It's a bust. You know, he busted. It's like it was bust, bro. It was like he didn't perform to our expectations, but like you said, in his mind, he thinks he performed to his expectation. Maybe to others, they think they're like, no, this is what Neymar does. Like, I don't want to know why people expected him to carry, but I mean, with a price tag like that, yeah, you know, we invested in his talent. But hey, I mean, good luck to Neymar with his 500 maids and 3 mansions and private jets and shit. Listen, bro, ultimately, we're here sitting on the podcast. You're crying with your dollar bills. I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
But as a football community, thank you for nothing. No, I'm kidding, but yeah,
bro. I think it invites the Mourinho Dele Alli conversation about like, yesterday I was 20. You will regret it if you don't expect more from you. I wonder if Neymar will hold on to the fact and say to himself, yo, you know, in Ligue 1, I actually never played more than 59% of the games in one season. So if I had, look at my stats, I would have been all that. I wonder if he'll look at that as the high school quarterback memory of like those were the days that I peaked.
Or if you'll look
at it with regret and go, I wish I gave more, because I had more to give. I went soft, and I have a lot, but maybe I could have done more. I wonder if he'll regret, or if he'll go, look, I played 60% of the games. I made like a freaking bandit. All the money in the world. I broke records. I won a Champions League in my life. I won multiple leagues. I now have more money than Brazil. Bro, this is it. Like,
I have more money than Brazil. Brazilian GDP in my pocket. You know, like, that's basically it. So
that's exactly it, bro.
Good for him.
Anyway, can we move? I have at least one more I want to get to, depending on time here. And it's on the note of potential. And this is going to be I don't know if it's a take. Just the fact that I'm asking this, I think we'll lead some people to ask interesting questions.
Yeah.
Joe.
Let's hear it, Nate.
Has Erling Haaland peaked?
Wow. Okay.
Because I'm not arguing that he has. I'm not arguing that he hasn't. Let's look at the facts, okay? Because again, I want to lay this out as you think about it.
Okay.
In Haaland's first season in the Premier League of Manchester, destroyed the goal-scoring record for the league in a 38-week season, right? Won the treble, had 53 goals in all competitions, but the fact that he won the treble and broke that personal record in his first season, you know, he'll probably win the Ballon d'Or. I think we'd all probably say he's the favorite to win the Ballon d'Or come the fall. Mm-hmm. The peak means nothing can be higher than this. Will Erling Haaland ever win another treble? Will he ever be? Okay. Will he ever break every record while winning a treble? Because even if Haaland scores 50 goals in the Prem, is that is that better? If they just win the Prem or the Champions League or one of the other, because unless Haaland wins another treble having scored more goals, I don't know if I'll be able to say that that is his peak. Meaning, was what we saw last season and in the early parts of this one, like as he approaches the Ballon d'Or. Correct. Is that Erling Haaland's peak?
Okay. Okay. So I'll phrase it like this then. Statistically, maybe. Maybe. Ability-wise, no.
That's a great way to answer it, Joe. Great way to answer.
That's what I think. Statistically, on paper, the goals, the trophies, maybe. You know, he had one of the best seasons ever. Especially, definitely one of the best first seasons ever. Okay. Mm-hmm. But ability-wise, he still has time to develop.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't score 1 million goals like he did last season. He scores 5 more, less, or more crucial goals. But his ability will definitely improve. His ability to connect the play, his ability to press, that improves over time, which will make him a god, basically. All right?
Right.
Maybe he can... Maybe he's consistently, he can't get the try. Who knows? Who knows? But I think statistically, potentially, that could be a thing. Like, I think maybe he must have peaked there. But ability-wise, no. I don't think him as a player has peaked. He still has so much potential, so much to learn. I think that's really the best way of putting it.
I think you're right. And that's such a succinct way of answering it, because I think that's exactly it. We might never see him score or contribute to as many accolades personally and as a team as we did. And the reason I say that is, as much as people want to peg City to be the favorites at everything, to even suggest that City can win another treble under Pep is, I would say, like heresy. Absolute, disgustingly disgraceful to the institution of the sport. Because it took City their whole life under Pep and before, since the takeover, to get one Champions League. Yes, they've dominated the Prem. But to suggest now that every year they're going to be able to win the most prestigious and elusive accomplishment that only 6 teams in the history of the entire sport have done, there's no way we can say that City will win another treble. If they do, we look at it as, we can never say that's normal. Ever.
Yeah.
If that happens again, what do we even do? What do we even do? We have to discuss it if that were to happen. But I don't think we can suggest it, which means I don't think that Haaland wins another treble at City or anywhere else if he ever leaves. I think he can score more goals, and I think he can become a better player. I think you're right. In terms of abilities, I was watching the game that he played most recently there against Newcastle, and they were saying, it's almost like he's better on a first touch than when he takes a second to compose himself, because just the way he shifts his body. And I thought that was exactly right, because, you know, sometimes he takes a good touch and he fires or he gets it under control. But largely when he takes a touch, he doesn't have great composure on the ball, right? Yeah. Like the abilities that you'd expect from a big man to be excellent at hold up play or link up or anything like that, or even aerially, are just not necessarily Haaland's strong suits. So if he can work within the system to end up getting even more goals, but largely it's improving his abilities on his first touch, on his timing, on his link-up play, on his understanding, because his instincts are second to none, right?
100%, but
it has to be anticipation, not just of the goal, sniffing out the goal, but how to anticipate what the defender's thinking you're going to do to change it, because eventually people will start to figure out how to defend Erling Haaland. I don't think that he's peaked in terms of his abilities either. I think that he has a lot of ability and a lot of room to get better.
100%.
I just don't know that the best version of Erling Haaland that we'll ever see will get another treble, because even if he gets 1,000 goals.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, like this is a big, big, big ask that we're talking about here. So I do wonder. And on the note of strikers, because we do have time for one more, on the note of strikers and everything in potential in the Prem, it's only natural. You're outspoken about the Bundesliga and Tottenham. I'm outspoken about the Bundesliga and Tottenham. It's a shame that you have not been on the show earlier to discuss this. Harry Kane moved to Bayern Munich.
Yes.
I have but one question, because we've addressed this slightly in the weeks that have preceded us. Does Kane's move to Bayern change your perception about the Bundesliga?
No. But I do have one thing to say, and this might be a bit controversial, actually. So a hot take on the topic of Kane, okay? This might drift us a little bit. I think Kane's time in Bayern, at it's a shorter time, he's going to have a better career than Lewandowski at Bayern.
Wow. Yeah. Damn,
yeah.
Bro.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Hot take.
How so? Because what did Lewandowski win, bro? He broke all the... You think Kane's gonna break all of Lewandowski's records?
I don't know if he's gonna break all his records. I don't care about individual records, but I think as a team record, like his bottle job mentality is gonna go away completely, and he's gonna win at least 2 Champions Leagues. Yeah, that's what I think. But it's a very alien take. But you know me, I love my hot takes. Yep. And I'm willing to get roasted for it, because fuck it, why not, right? But I think Kane, we all appreciated what Kane did in the Premier League, but I felt it was just so underestimated because of the fact he was playing for a shit club like Tottenham, right? Yeah. Now that he's in a team for the first time that we see that has quality, we're going to see him flourish after this season, if not this season as is. After this season, we're going to see a different type of Kane. This Kane is going to be Haaland in a sense of, I don't even need to take a touch. I'm like drilling it down the box.
Right.
And I'm going to be David Beckham, 2-1. That's going to be insane, bro. It's going to be crazy. He's going to and the pace that he has on the wing,
yeah,
it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be fun to watch. Maybe I'll give Bundesliga a watch this year. My perception is still going to be the same in a sense that Bayern are going to destroy this league again. Mm. And it's not only because of Bayern. Recently, I found out because it was self-sabotage, because these fucking Bundesliga teams don't know how to play at the last minute. Shout out Dortmund, which we did watch the come up together, right? So if it isn't Bayern, it's Dortmund shit in the bed or something like that. Mm. So, listen, Bayern is its own entity. There's the Bundesliga, and then there's Bayern Munich. Right. I think they stand side by side. If not Bayern, maybe a little bit more. So, my perception of the Bundesliga is the same. My perception of Bayern Munich fluctuates, right? That's how fair. I think of it. That's it. I know you're a diehard Bundesliga fan, and you know what? If anyone asks me, who do you know is a Bundesliga expert, I only have one name, and it's you. So don't worry. I know. Hopefully this year is more competitive, but I don't know, bro. I don't know shit about the Bundesliga as much.
You I'm know far from an expert. I'm just an expert around people who don't watch the Bundesliga. That's just it. Because yeah, okay, I do. Fair. They're like, whoa, this guy knows everything. I'm like, I do not. I just know a lot from watching.
I just watch it. Yeah.
I just watch 15 games of footy per weekend. So I watch 30 clubs every weekend, which means I have some knowledge about most of them.
Maybe
The reason I asked that, I love the way you put that, because largely I think the fact that this shows the Prem that other leagues have buying power, and that like there's nobody in the Prem that departure, I think, that would have meant more for the league to feel, particularly in England, than England's number 9.
Yeah,
Harry Kane chasing that goal-scoring record in the history of the competition, because they're like, yo, we got to go get... We're not going to get Erling Haaland, who played in Germany before, and he played for Dortmund, and this is another... We're going to get England's number 9 through and through Premier League. We're going to go take him and spend 100 mil of our money to go buy that dude and have him choose to play in Germany ahead of the Premier League. I think that does a lot for the Bundesliga. And you know why? Because as much as Bayern might be on par with the Bundesliga as a whole, Bayern play within the Bundesliga, which means Harry Kane fans, people who watch Spurs, who watch Kane, who watch the Prem, who say, I like Harry Kane. Maybe they watch Bundesliga now, because they're going to watch Bayern, and then they're going to watch Bayern play games like the Super Cup final there, where what happened? Bayern get run through, and they start to go, yo, who's Danny Olmo? That guy's freaking good. Where is he from? And then they go, he's Spanish. What do you mean he's Spanish? Didn't look Spanish. Didn't sound Spanish. Danny Olmo. And then they go, wait, who else plays at Leipzig? And then they start to learn names. And they go, wait, Lois Openda. Who's Lois Openda? Like, where'd this dude come from? And they go, oh, he came from Ligue 1 last season? Wait, he had the same amount of goals as Kylian Mbappe almost. And I think that it starts to spiral when you start to learn about these players. Whereas these people might not have been watching the Bundesliga prior because they're going, who plays in Germany? Okay, what's a Musiala? What's a Jamal Musiala? What's a Jude Bellingham? If he was any good, he'd be playing in England, right? Isn't that always the case? The fact that they can't say if he was good, he'd be in the Prem, because the best one, arguably, in the Prem, went to Germany, I think speaks volumes and sends waves across the world. Not to mention, of course, the Saudi buying power poaching top talent from the Prem. So I think that it does do a lot for the reputation of the Bundesliga, because even look, when Messi went to Inter Miami, bro, every club in the league had to sign off on that and help contribute to what he would be making. Why? Because every club benefits from Messi being there. Yeah. Harry Kane might help Bayern Munich win two more Champions Leagues in the next 4 years, which means the Bundesliga holds two European Cups in that time span. And it's not guaranteed, because Tuchel hasn't had a great time at Bayern, that they're always going to smash teams. Even if they win the league, bro, more people will be fans of Bayer Leverkusen from watching those games. More people will be fans of Dortmund, of whoever. Name whichever club you want in the league, because they're going to be watching them now, and they're going to be watching them because of that. It's the same thing as when Davies went and Bundesliga started being played on Sportsnet, because they're like, oh, look, we have to show because there's a Canadian over there now. I think that that's what's going to draw the eyeballs, and I love that as a Bundesliga fan, even though I know that like Bayer Leverkusen are not going to go buying talent from the Prem, right? Like, obviously, it doesn't work that way. It tends to work the other way, but nonetheless, bro, I'm excited about it. But there's still a few questions that I could go here, but we've been going for an hour, so I think it's about time that we wrap these pressing questions that we had to discuss. In other words, we're wrapping episode number 207 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. Joe, welcome back, bro. So nice having you.
Thank you. It's good to be back, bro. It's good to be back. I miss talking about football, not Chelsea related, of course.
Which took up half our episode.
You know, when you're in, you're in, bro. When you're in, it's you're exactly in. You know, come on, man. Come on.
Bro, we're coming up on the end of the transfer window. We're coming up on everything we have to predict across the whole season. So the next couple weeks at Jerswell are already all laid out. I hope that we can get all of us together on this damn show. Maybe we'll even give Milan an invite, bring him on so he can share his opinions on this damn program too.
100%, bro. You know, the thing is, like, summer's nearly done. We're back to normal living. So we'll be back soon. Don't even worry about it.
100%. Hey, man, Jerswell doesn't miss a week. We don't go on vacation. We don't take breaks here. And we're always here every week for you. Mind you, that being said, I am going on vacation now for the next couple of days. So I'm glad I'm going to have this out so everybody can listen to it. By the time you've listened to this, you'll now know I'm somewhere exploring the wilderness in Tobermory, Ontario, which is my heaven, my peace, my serenity.
I love Tobermory.
Such a wonderful place. Guys, we're rambling here. We hope you enjoyed episode number 207 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. Joe, any final thoughts before we wrap?
Pray for me this season. That's all. Thank you.
It's always wonderful to have you, dude. Guys, thank you for tuning in. We absolutely love you. Be sure to check out all Jersey Wall content at the link in our description. Otherwise, if you like the show, share it with your friends. Let's continue to grow. We're only 6.5 years into this, guys. Still lots of time to get on the bandwagon. Still lots of time to blow it up. It feels like we've been doing it for a long time. But after 8 years...
We're like crypto, bro. We're like a crypto coin.
We're going to go to the moon, bro. To the moon. No false promises, bro. Yeah. Anyway, guys, take care. We love you. We'll see you next time right here on the Jersey Wall Podcast, baby.